There's Philip J. Vandervoort III and young Zach. What's going on there, guys?
Not a whole lot. What's new with you, John?
Yeah, I was going to say, no shortage of things to bring up and discuss today.
No kidding. And we're going to start right away here. An update on that story out of Georgia. Appalachia High School, 45 minutes outside Atlanta, as we were getting off the air yesterday. Story breaking about a school shooting. There were no details at the time. Now there are plenty of them with more details yet to come. It involves the murder of two students, the murder of two teachers, and the wounding of, you got nine other students in the hospital. Other students hurt in the melee, the panic that understandably ensued immediately. Anyway, here is the director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
Once they encountered the subject immediately surrendered to these officers, and he was taken into custody. Additionally, what I want you to know as of now, there are four individuals who are deceased from this incident, nine that have been taken to local hospitals with various injuries. Of those that are deceased, two are students and two are teachers here at the school. The priority right now for us within this investigation is to gather all the facts, to make sure that we're accurate with it, because this is a murder investigation. As the sheriff mentioned earlier this morning, the shooter is in custody. His name is Colt, that's C-O-L-T, Gray. He is a 14-year-old student here at the school, G-R-A-Y. He is a 14-year-old student here at the high school. Again, he has been taken into custody. He will be charged with murder, and he will be tried as an adult and handled as an adult.
Man, they don't mess around there. Didn't waste any time in announcing that he would be tried as an adult. It turns out, we are learning, that the FBI now admits that you were hearing from someone from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the federal Bureau of Investigation. The FBI admitted yesterday that they had received tips last year about someone who was threatening to shoot up his school. And it was this same kid who was then 13 years of age. In May of 2023, the FBI's National Threat Operations Center received several anonymous tips about online threats to commit a school shooting at an unidentified location and time. Within 24 hours, they determined the post originated in Georgia, and they narrowed it down further to Jackson County, and they located the likely person responsible for the threats, 13-year-old boy. They show up at their home. They interview the 13-year-old and his father. The father stated that he had hunting guns in the house, but that the boy did not have unsupervised access to them. As for the 13-year-old, he denied making these threats. He said, well, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. The FBI said that there was, quote, no probable cause for arrest and that no additional law enforcement action could be taken by local, state, or federal authorities. And they confirmed that that is the same 13-year-old, now 14-year-old, who is in custody charged with those murders and wounding. Again, 4 counts of murder and 9 kids in the hospital. Now, when they say, gee, we can't arrest him, I guess there's nothing else we can do. The hell there isn't. There is plenty that you can do if you believe someone like this poses a threat. Starting with, you expel them from their school. That apparently did not happen. The second thing is there could be ongoing monitoring of this student, and it's not clear that there was any monitoring. It was, okay, well, he was just making these threats, and we have no probable cause for an arrest. Maybe he was just bragging. Maybe he was just pretending to be, you know, pretending to be a dangerous person. You don't need to look the other way and say, if I can't make an arrest, I guess I can't do anything. They could have covered this kid like a blanket in terms of if they didn't kick him out of school, they could have required that if he was in school, he would be in a separate setting, or that if he came to school, he was subject to be searched every day. You know, the school has a school resource officer. We're getting different reports. Some reports say law enforcement officers confronted the student and he immediately put his gun down. Another report says that it was the school resource officer, who is law enforcement, who confronted the student and ordered him to put his gun down. So there are a number of steps that could have been taken by the school and by local government. And there could have been ongoing communication with either the Georgia Bureau of Investigation or the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So there were a number of options available. Now, of course, there will be an attempt to politicize this. You have Joe Biden releasing a statement that, you know, we need to have common sense gun reforms. And, of course, common sense gun reforms mean what exactly? What are you going to say? What is your great idea? That you can't have hunting rifles in your home if you have kids in the house? And, well, they have to be locked up. Maybe they were locked up. And the kid either got the combination or he broke the gun cabinet it was in. Who knows? All I know is that if this kid was as disturbed as people believe, that he should have been subject to immediate in-depth mental health treatment as well. Now, here's something else we're learning about this shooting. The school that was the target yesterday, Appalachee High School, it's in Winder, Georgia. It's about 45 minutes outside Atlanta. They received a threatening phone call yesterday. And it warned that there would be shootings at 5 high schools, starting with Appalachee. That threat came in before the student shooter opened fire and killed, again, 2 students and 2 teachers. The officials said they're still investigating the call to try and find out who made it, who was behind that phone call. One student told the Associated Press that he heard 10 gunshots and then heard a law enforcement officer yelling at someone, telling him to put his gun down. Again, we've received a report that that law enforcement officer was the school resource officer. Thank goodness they had a law enforcement officer. Thank God they had a cop as their law enforcement officer. Imagine the damage he could have done before he was confronted, as it was. He shot more than a dozen people in the school. Nine other people are, most of them students, are in the hospital, in addition to the four fatalities. So that is what we have on Georgia. And when we get more information, we are definitely going to pass it your way. We have a lot of other things going on in the news, including an update for you on the I-5 shooting that took place. We now have another victim, 8 total victims so far, identified in what essentially was a mass shooting committed by someone in a car rather than walking into a building or shooting into a crowd from a precipice somewhere. You've got someone just going down the street randomly firing on people. We also will have more information about the accused shooter. And a lot of other things going on in the news as well. Donald Trump supposed being criticized for telling Pennsylvania voters, you have no choice, vote for me. We have Trump's remark, and we're going to play it in context. He made it at a town hall that was hosted by Sean Hannity. It was a live town hall. And you can hear the comment yourself, and you can decide whether Trump was ordering the people of Pennsylvania to vote for him or whether he was just saying, geez, when you compare me and my opponent, there's just no choice. You got to vote for me. The context matters quite a bit. Also, on the Kamala Harris campaign had a rough day yesterday. First of all, it appears that the honeymoon is over. And the pollster, Frank Luntz, who's very even-handed, he's no fan of Donald Trump and no fan of Kamala Harris, he explains why the honeymoon is over, what he looked at, what polling number tells you that the honeymoon is over for her. Plus, Tim Walz, an embarrassing occurrence, speaking of polls, which we'll explain, that involves the Minnesota governor and Democratic vice presidential nominee. Also, members of Walz's own family, including his brother, are announcing they're voting for Donald Trump. So that's just part of what we have coming your way here on The Commute with Carlson.
Well, social media-wise, we've got another controversy involving big tech and political bias.
Oh, boy.
Did you hear about what Alexa results were giving?
Yeah, I did.
Did you hear about this?
You got to play it.
Yeah, I've got the audio.
This is going to be wonderful.
Right. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This one has been being passed around on social media. It involves a 40-second clip, maybe a 35-second clip, with a young woman who is asking Alexa about the election, I guess. Who to vote for is kind of the jumping off point. So here's what the young woman asks Alexa.
Alexa, why should I vote for Donald Trump?
I cannot provide content that promotes a specific political party or a specific candidate.
Alexa, why should I vote for Kamala Harris?
While there are many reasons to vote for Kamala Harris, the most significant may be that she is a strong candidate with a proven track record of accomplishment. As the first female vice president, Harris has already broken down a major gender barrier, and her career in politics has been characterized by a commitment to progressive ideals and a focus on helping disenfranchised communities.
Is this on the level?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. I was wondering the same thing, and then I saw a different video. That one's getting circulated that I just played you. I'd seen that one circulated on a few different social media handles. And then I noticed Fox News had a different video where it essentially said the same thing. And according to Fox News, the comment from Amazon, the creators of the Alexa smart device, said it was an error. And then...
Oh, no kidding.
That there was no other immediate elaboration on that. But as you have pointed out, isn't it odd that this bias always flows in one direction, whether it's... Whenever network news media, whether it's big tech, related to the Twitter files that we found out.
Whenever it's an oversight, whenever it's an error, whenever, you know, they censor someone unfairly, we're very sorry for the error. We're very sorry for the mistake. We're very sorry for the oversight. But it always invariably flows in one direction. The mistakes always flow in the direction that helps the political left.
Benefits a Democrat.
We have an Alexa here in the office. I'll do some investigative journalism during the break. And,
I would encourage everyone else, give it a try and see if you get different results today.
Well,
they probably
fixed it by now.
Exactly. It may be that there's been a quote-unquote correction made.
I'm sure they've served up all the reasons to vote for Donald Trump this time.
Right. We need balance.
As it relates to elections, Elon Musk, who now owns X, Twitter, he posted a big graphic. It's kind of meant to look like a campaign picture or poster.
Yeah.
And the words across the top say, "Don't let Trump cheat." And then there's a cartoon. It's an illustration more than a cartoon. Illustration of a variety of different people holding up identity, and it says demand voter ID and paper ballots. So Elon Musk kind of using that to I guess troll people a little bit, but an important public service announcement. And then I would always add my caveat.
Understand though, this is the agenda of the Democrats, is to do away with voter ID.
Yeah.
Call it racist. They say it's racist to have voter ID. Right. And then do away to the greatest extent possible with at-the-poll voting and have everyone vote by mail. You don't request your ballot. Just everyone who's on the registered voter list gets a ballot.
One gets sent to the address.
And then the next step is play down the importance of having the signature on your ballot match the signature on file when you register to vote, which is, if you think about it, the only way of authenticating that the person who casts the ballot is actually the person who's registered to vote, who's connected to that ballot.
Yeah.
The only way you can that you can authenticate that is through signature match. That's the next target.
Now,
they've already taken a run at it here in Washington and failed, but that effort's going to continue.
You bet. So Elon Musk's post about don't let Trump cheat, demand voter ID and paper ballots, that was separate and distinct. But then I stumbled across a post from the United States House of Representatives, the House Judiciary GOP Committee. Mm-hmm. And it's the official Twitter for the House Committee on the Judiciary. This is Jim Jordan's committee in the U.S. House, the Ohio congressman. And the House Judiciary GOP committee posted a screen grab of a Fox Business News report, and it says countries with voter ID. So, again, back to this idea of positively identifying someone if they're going to vote. And on this on-screen graphic, some of the countries that have and require voter ID, let me list them: Canada, Venezuela, Brazil, Chile, Belgium, Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden, Denmark, New Zealand, Australia, India, Japan, Ghana, Pakistan, Kenya, Jamaica, Haiti. So you've got Canada, you've got North America, you've got South America, you've got Europe, you've got Africa, you've got Asian countries all doing this. And another one that they list on this graphic from Fox Business News, Palestine. So Palestine even requires voter ID to vote. And yet Democrats, who ostensibly would seem to support everything about Palestinian causes, will they go so far as to support that Palestinian cause? We'll see.
There is a video out there which is just wonderful that juxtaposes an interviewer asking students and faculty and staff at an elite college campus, is voter ID racist? Is it racist to require voter ID? And invariably, oh, yes, yes. It's an undue hardship on people of color, yes. And then the interviewer goes, I believe, to Harlem and just interviews black folks on the street and says, do you think showing ID at the polls is unfair or racist? And it's, what? No. No, there's nothing unreasonable about that. You're just making sure that the person is the voter. Okay. Now, I want to play, we found that clip that I was talking about where you have man on the street interviews. The first interviews are being held on college campuses, and most of the people that he's talking to are white. White college students, white professors and college administrators. And then he goes from talking to them to talking to black folks in Harlem about whether or not it's unfair, undue hardship, or outright racist to require voter ID at the polls when you vote. Because most states still have at the poll voting. Here is a little bit of that back and forth.
Do you have an opinion on voter ID laws?
Yeah, they're usually pretty racist and they're bad. I think voter ID laws are a way to perpetuate racism.
Would you say would you go as far to say they're, those laws are racist?
For sure.
Do you think it suppresses the African-American vote?
Definitely. Because they're less likely to have state IDs.
Minority voters are less likely to have the kinds of IDs that have been described or required.
These type of people don't live in areas with easy access to DMVs or other places where they can get identification.
Do you think that kid has ever been to one of those areas? But again, this almost sounds North Korean, is that they're saying with absolute certitude and probably minimal actual information or knowledge about it. But anyway, let's continue.
Get IDs you do over the internet. Does that also make it difficult for black people in particular?
Yeah, you have to have access to the internet. You have to be able to pay an internet service provider for certain fees.
Do you think that's harder for black people to go online?
Well, I feel like they don't have the knowledge of how it works.
A lot of people have smartphones, but you might not have data.
For most of the communities, they don't really know what is out there just because they're not aware or they're not informed. I also think there's a repression of black voting with how if you're a convicted felon, you're not allowed to vote and everything. And when you look at swing states like Florida, that's a huge population of the African Americans.
Now I'm here in East Harlem to ask black people their thoughts on what you just heard. Do you have ID normally? You carry ID around?
Yes, I have state ID.
Do you carry ID?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anybody any black person who doesn't carry ID?
No. Everyone that I know has an ID. Why would they think we don't have ID? That's a lie. Why would they say that?
I love this. Why would anyone think that?
Have ID?
Yes.
Because I have my ID and my friends have their ID. So we know what we need to carry around.
Yeah, everybody that I know have ID. That's one of the things you need to walk around with New York with, ID.
Do you know any black adult who does not have ID?
No, I don't.
Is it a weird thing to even say that?
Yes, it is.
What is this, some type of trick candy camera?
I
like
know,
that?
Right? That's the only thing I brought with me.
Those are legit IDs. I heard a lot also that black people can't figure out how to get to the DMV.
Really?
What's that saying to you?
I know it's that, but on 25th Street.
Do you know where the ID, the DMV is right here?
It's on 125th Street and 3rd Avenue, I believe.
You know how to get there?
Yeah.
Do you have a problem getting there if you have to get there?
No.
I know these sound like silly questions. You know how to get the DMV?
Of course.
You know where it is?
Okay. So here's the problem for our country. The people who are running our country, the people who are running the Kamala Harris campaign, they're all from that first group. Okay. They're all from black folks don't know how to get ID. Oh, it's very racist. They're these people.
Do you have an opinion on voter ID laws?
Yeah, they're usually pretty racist and they're bad. I think voter ID laws are a way to perpetuate racism.
Would you go as far to say that those laws are racist?
For sure.
Do you think it suppresses the African American vote?
Definitely. Because they're less likely to have state IDs.
Minority voters are less likely to have the kinds of IDs that have been described.
Okay, these people are stupid. Here's the problem. They're not stupid, but they're utterly ignorant. They're street stupid, okay? They have no idea of the lives of black people and the everyday lives of people who are not elites. And yet they are the people who, for the most part, are the Biden administration. They are the people who make up the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. They are the party who are basically messing things up. They are the people who are our leaders in the state legislature. They are the people who are running King County. They are the people who, at least until recently, were running City Hall and our Seattle City Council. They are the people responsible for our policies on homelessness, on juvenile delinquency, on how to handle juvenile delinquency, on drugs, on crime. These are the people responsible for our approach to these issues. How are they doing? How impressed are you with how they've carried out their job? I love this audio. And the fact that this guy, you know, went to an elite college campus and then let's head over to East Harlem and ask people there. And you just get to you the second you get reality. The first you get ideology. All of what you heard from all these, of course, voter ID is racist. Of course, that's ideology. And then the common sense you were hearing from the folks in East Harlem, that's reality. So I thought you'd enjoy that. All right. Kamala Harris is, I'm going to be talking about this with my buddy Lars Larson in a moment. The Kamala Harris honeymoon period is officially over, according to national pollster Frank Luntz, who is not pro-Trump and he's not pro-Harris. And he explains why we know that is the case. Plus, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, kind of embarrassing, members of his own family, which include his brother, are now endorsing Donald Trump for president. We'll get into some of those details as well. It's a very wild morning. There's stories all over the place that we're going to be getting to on the commute with Carlson. From little kids to grown-up men here, Lars Larson, our noon to three host on the commute with Carlson. Good morning, Lars. How are you?
Good morning, John. Yeah, they all got high, and look who's now running the country. So. I'm just telling you.
I want to talk to you about this very interesting observation made by Frank Luntz, nationally known pollster, traditionally Republican, but he's no fan of Donald Trump and no fan of Kamala Harris either. But he noticed that, you know, Kamala Harris, when she takes over for Joe Biden, there's this explosion of enthusiasm and massive increase in fundraising. And then there's their national convention, which was widely seen as successful, and United Party, all this excitement. And he says, it's all come back to earth now.
Yeah, and it appears to have been. And she's not, she didn't really get a bounce out of that. She really didn't get a bounce out of Walz. And now Walz's family, as you've already told your listeners, is advocating for Donald Trump and say, his own brother says, don't trust Tim Walz.
I know.
I mean, how crazy is that? But there you go.
So
he knows him best.
Here's one thing, one very important indicator to look at, according to Frank Luntz, which is voter enthusiasm. Are people enthusiastic about voting for the candidate that they support? And for Democrats, it got voter enthusiasm was very low, you know, back in July. Right. It was down in the 40s, and then it went way up above 70% for Kamala Harris. So from the low 40s to 70%, and now it's dropped 10 percentage points in just a month. Donald Trump's supporters they've been enthusiastic for Trump at about the same range, or about 60%. So now the Democrats have slightly under the Republicans when it comes to voter enthusiasm.
Well, think about this, John. My analysis would be all the Democrats were saying, I'll bite my tongue and vote for Joe if I have to. It's my only choice. Then when Joe is pushed out of the way unceremoniously and Kamala takes his place, they thought, oh, thank God, I don't have to vote for him. I can vote for her. Then they see that she has not miraculously turned into something she never has been, which is a good candidate with good positions and a good ability to communicate. And they say, oh, yeah, I don't have to vote. I hate Trump. I didn't really want to vote for Joe, but I would if I had to. Now I've been relieved of that, and this is what I got instead. I could see the loss of enthusiasm, because maybe they thought that being anointed the nominee would suddenly miraculously make her something she has never been. She has never been a good candidate. And you can say, well, you're just being partisan. No, take a look at her as a candidate. The voters in 2020 decided she was a bad candidate.
Yeah.
And now the voters are coming to the same, you know, recollection is like, oh, hold on, this is that woman who couldn't get a single vote in 2020 and didn't get a single vote this year, and she's been forced on us. Would you feel enthusiastic about that choice, John?
We are 61 days out from the election, and the answer is no.
And Walz is just a barrel of contradictions. I mean, they're going to have a really tough time explaining him, and it's not just his pseudo-military record.
Donald Trump is under fire. You know, I was actually doing a little show prep, listening to, if you will, liberal radio, NPR. And they played a very short clip of Donald Trump telling Pennsylvania voters, there's no choice, you got to vote for me. And it made it sound like he was ordering the people of Pennsylvania, which is a key state, that the Democrats cannot win in 2024 without Pennsylvania.
Are you saying that liberal news media outlet distorted what Donald Trump was saying?
It sounds amazing. It sounds really.
This never happens. Actually, how could this be?
But The state of Pennsylvania is an absolute must win for the Democrats. Republicans really need Pennsylvania, but they still have a way to win the presidency without it. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, getting down to, you know, 7 or 8 swing states. In every formulation about whether the Democrats can win the presidency, Pennsylvania is a must. She has changed. Kamala Harris has changed her position on fracking, which is the part of the lifeblood of the Pennsylvania economy, especially outside major cities like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And so she has changed her position on this issue. Pete Ducey from Fox News asked a really good, fair, but tough question of Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press spokesperson. Have a listen.
If the vice president's values have not changed, why have so many of her positions on policies changed?
I would say look at what the vice president has done with this president the last 3.5 years.
Are you sure you want that to happen, Kamal? Or are you sure you want that to happen, Karine? You really want people to compare the last 3.5 years with the previous 4 years?
Look what we have been able to do. Look what we've been able to do at the border.
Really? Look what we've done at the border? We've seen what you've done to the border, but let's press on.
Not much help from Republicans, because they're too busy listening to the former president, sadly, and telling them not to actually do the things that majority of Americans want to see them doing, and that being dealing with the challenges at the border. They listen to Donald Trump.
Okay. Bottom line to all this nonsense is Joe Biden could have done nothing when he took the presidency, and there'd be no problem with the border. There'd be no issue. There would have been no flood of illegals into the United States. But instead, they changed all of Donald Trump's policies precisely because they did want a flood of illegals into the United States. They wanted that to happen. And they knew full well that it would mean more drugs and more human trafficking, girls being sent over the border to make money for pimps having sex with people. They knew that would more of that would be happening as well. But that was an acceptable price to pay to flood America with more people from other countries. That was their goal. That's what the left wants to have happen. And ideally, then to quickly get them connected to government programs and then give them citizenship and tell them, you got to keep the Democrats in power if you want the continuation of these services. They also assumed that more people with brown skin coming into the United States would increase their popularity with Hispanics in America. Because, hey, look, more people like you are entering the country. And the response from growing numbers of Hispanic Americans is they don't have anything in common with me other than my skin color. What are you talking about? They're not American. They're not citizens. They didn't immigrate here legally. They're screwing up our communities, and our neighborhoods are less safe, and our schools are chaotic, and social services are overrun. So this issue blew up in the Democrats' face. And they come up with, finally, in the fourth year of the administration, they said, well, let's make a deal. And the deal that they were going to make with Republican senators who were utterly gullible were that, I tell you what, we have up to 10,000 illegals every day coming into the United States right now. What if we cut that number down to about 2,500? And you've got Republican senators saying, okay, yeah, that's a reduction. We'll go for that. In other words, we'll reduce the number of illegals that we're allowing into this country, or in some cases flying into this country. We'll reduce that number. And if you're good with that, we've got a compromise. Well, the compromise would have locked this country into an official tolerance policy on illegal immigration. And Republicans were foolish enough to go for it. Donald Trump blew the whistle on that right away. Good for him. So the question remains unanswered. You know, Pete Ducey asked it perfectly.
If the vice president's values had not changed, why have so many of her positions on policies changed?
I would say look at what the vice president has done with this president the last 3.5 years.
No, let's not look at that. Let's have you answer the question. If her values haven't changed, why have her positions changed? So now we get to Trump. Trump, again, taken deliberately out of context by his critics, including much of the misnamed so-called mainstream media, that he was ordering Pennsylvania voters to vote for him. They was telling Pennsylvania voters, you have to vote for me. Let's give the context. This happened last night at a town hall in Pennsylvania where they were talking about, coincidentally, Kamala Harris changing her position on fracking. Here's what she said when she was running about 5 years ago, September 4th, 2019.
Will you commit to implementing a federal ban on fracking your first day in office, adding the United States to the list of countries who have banned this devastating practice?
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
So, yeah. So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes. And I've, again, worked on that.
Okay. No ambiguity there. Very straightforward. So he was asked, Donald Trump was asked about this last night in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And here's what Trump said about Kamala Harris and fracking.
Pennsylvania can't take a chance that that answer is true. But she's been there for 20 years. That's what she's been saying for a long time. And she will do that. There's no chance that she's going to allow it. The election will take place. If she won, you're not going to have any fracking in Pennsylvania. You have 500,000 jobs. Think of that. It's your biggest business. And you get a big majority of your income from fracking. And you have somebody that's not going to allow fracking. She's not going to allow it. You can't take the chance. You have no choice. You've got to vote for me. You've got to vote for me. Even if you don't like me, you know?
So clearly, I mean, that's Donald Trump, you know, having fun. And he was laughing when he said it. He said, so you've got no choice. You gotta vote for me. That's quite a bit different from how some media outlets are portraying this as Donald Trump telling Pennsylvania voters they must vote for him. And here is Donald Trump continuing.
No, you have to have fracking. You know, you're the biggest in the country for this. You have two of the biggest sites in the world. It's a massive business for Pennsylvania, and you can't take a chance. She will not allow fracking. She's not going to, and she's got a lot of other problems too.
Okay. Don't get into those right now. But the bottom line is, again, this was the Q&A from September 4th, 2019. You know, if we were talking about something 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, you could say, well, you know, I've thought about this. I've changed my mind. But no, this is just from 5 years ago. Listen to how definitive and clear-cut she is on this.
Will you commit to implementing a federal ban on fracking your first day in office, adding the United States to the list of countries who have banned this devastating practice?
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
So, yeah. So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes. And I've, again, worked on that.
Now she needs Pennsylvania. So she has changed her stated position. And what Trump is saying is you're a fool if you believe her. And once again, I think that Trump has it right. You are a fool if you believe her. Kamala Harris is an ideological progressive leftist. When she began running for president, she was the most liberal member of the Senate, more liberal than Elizabeth Warren, more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Okay? She grew up in Berkeley. She spent her teenage years in Canada. She went to a liberal university. She began her career in San Francisco politics. And then she won statewide office. Ironically, she just barely got elected, less than 1% of the vote. She won attorney general in California, which is a ardently blue state. She still just barely won. Then she was elected to the U.S. Senate because they have a top two system there, and it was two Democrats. And she runs for president, does terrible. She started out okay. She actually started out with a fair in double digits, knew who she was and liked her. And the word on the street was that she was going to be the female Obama. And boy, that didn't turn out to be true. And she ended up ignominiously leaving the presidential race before the first contest, before the Iowa caucuses. She was out of the race. And then Joe Biden had committed to picking a woman to be his running mate and then agreed that it should be a black woman. And you look around, who do you go with? And he went with Kamala Harris. My point here is she has never been immersed in the larger America. She's never had to expose, to grow her career. All she had to appeal to were Democrats. All she had to appeal to were liberal voters in San Francisco and Democratic voters in California. And Democratic voters in the primary. She's never had to appeal to a larger audience. That's why, despite her years of experience as a public speaker and as someone who's been in public life, that she has been so very, very cautious. She just has no idea how to appeal how to speak to and establish rapport with and work with Republicans or even conservative Democrats. She's only had to deal with her own party. And that is why she is so astonishingly unimpressive. Philip J., what's going on the internet?
Let's do a follow-up on the Bremerton High School coach that was fired over the midfield prayer at the football games. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. A couple of different news outlets have been updating this story. About the Bremerton High School football coach, Joe Kennedy. And I'm looking at a story from Cairo 7 TV, and it says the Bremerton School District will be financially on the hook for the large settlement they still owe to the former praying football coach. So it's the majority of a $1.7 million settlement that's owed to former football coach Joe Kennedy. And the story is that initially the Bremerton School District wanted its insurance company to cover this legal settlement.
I remember that, yeah.
But a panel of judges this week has ruled that the legal fees are to be excluded from the insurance policy.
Well, that was most of the settlement.
Yeah, so I don't know what the specific amount is, but the story says the majority of the $1.7 million settlement will now have to come from the district. So for their decision to, I guess, initially suspend and then ended up in lawsuit, all those Bremerton School District taxpayers, you're now paying for this decision by the school district.
If they had just left him alone, if they had just left him alone, none of this would have happened. They have no one but themselves to blame. Bear in mind something very important. There was no complaint about Joe Kennedy.
Good reminder.
There was never a complaint about Joe Kennedy. School officials found it didn't even know about this. They were informed about it when somebody dashed off a note to either someone at the district or someone at the school saying, it's so nice to see this coach out there praying with his players and players from the other team as well after the football game.
Yep.
And they say, what? You can't do that. And it was because the school and the district stubbornly refused to just quietly back off. Right. Again, no one had complained, but they had to push it.
Yeah.
So you know what, Bremerton School District? You brought this on your Kitsap School District. You brought this on yourself.
Yeah. So I think that might be the final chapter as it relates to the lawsuit now that those judges have ruled. This one's going to revolve around a picture of members of Tim Walz's family, the Nebraska side of the Tim Walz family, because that's where he was born and raised, although he's been in Minnesota for most of his adult life. And
well, Nebraska's right next door.
Exactly. You know. Several members of the Walz family say they're voting and supporting Donald Trump in the 2024 election. And this comes up from time to time where you have political families that don't always see eye to eye, and there's political differences among the family members. But Donald Trump Jr. picked up on this picture that has been posted with Tim Walz's brother, Jeff. And Jeff Walz had made prior public comments that he disagreed with his brother, the governor, and the football coach. Jeff is a resident of Florida.
By the way, he was not the coach. He was an assistant coach.
Assistant coach. But the brother in Florida had posted previously on Facebook that he's 100% opposed to his brother's political views. So, you know, if you thought the Kennedy family get-togethers were uncomfortable with RFK Jr. and his political viewpoints, I don't even know if the Walz family does these get-togethers. But
now, in fairness to Governor Walz, he and his brother have not spoken since 2016.
Okay.
And that was at the funeral of a family member until last month. Their mother arranged some sort of a conversation between the two.
Okay.
But here's what I would say in terms of fair play. You have these shirt tail cousins of Donald Trump, like Mary Trump, who are always on the news being portrayed as, you know, Trump family members.
Cable news guests and things like that. Yeah.
And so I guess my view is, well, if you can play that game, I guess the Trump people can play that game, too. And the media who supports Trump, they could play that game.
Yeah.
But you know, in fairness, his brother, he's not estranged. They're just, you know, they've lost touch over the years. They don't talk much. And, you know, he's a lot closer relative to Tim Walz than Mary Trump is to Donald Trump.
Yeah, you stole my joke. I was going to say, well, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz can sleep well in the knowledge that they're going to get the vote and the support of Mary Trump in 2024.
That's right.
So I was going to end that one.
And that's our social media sweep for hour number two of the Commute
with
Council.
That's a wrap. The dust broom is empty.
Let's get local here. What an interesting story out of Bellevue. Going to talk about a pair of crime stories here. This involves a back and forth between a security guard and some kid acting like a punk. And it evolves into an arrest being made of the kid's entire family. Have a listen. Here's Como's Preston Phillips.
In Bellevue, police say they uncovered an elaborate burglary ring all because of a simple litter violation. Como's Ryan Sims live tonight in Bellevue. And Ryan, this whole situation started at a Taco Bell. Ryan?
At 18-year-old Davis Bateman simply used a trash can. Police say they likely would not have uncovered one of the East Side's most extensive burglary rings, all of it involving stolen firearms and really a treasure trove of snatched items, including even a car. Following the Taco Bell incident, Davis was tracked to his home in Renton, where he lived with his mom, Crystal, and her boyfriend, Daniel. According to court papers, there were tons of credit card and debit cards inside the home, as well as passports and personal documents, all believed to be stolen by this trio. That's in addition to pistols, body armor, and an assault rifle. When cops investigated, they found video of Crystal and Daniel committing crimes across the sound, from using stolen credit cards at stores to breaking into people's homes to even stealing a Toyota Prius out of someone's driveway.
Come on out. Come down to these officers here.
Each member of this burglary ring was arrested, with their alleged crimes spanning from Newcastle to Kirkland.
Newcastle, which is between Redmond and Renton, and Bellevue to Kirkland. And the ring broken up. Now, understand, this kid is 18 years old. He's been in trouble previously. And, of course, he probably spent very little, if any, time in the Juvenile Justice Center. Do you know why? Because he needs to be at home in a nurturing environment, not incarcerated. Well, where did he learn to commit so much crime? He learned, not on the streets, he learned it at home from mom. I mean, this is, you know, like Ma Barker here. This is a criminal family. And, I mean, I hope they all end up in prison. This is a very extensive ring. This is just what they've uncovered so far. But there's, I'm guessing, a whole lot more. So there is that story out of Bellevue. And again, great job, Bellevue Police Department. Now let's go to what is essentially a mass shooting by car, where there are now 8 people who were shot at, 8 cars. Many of those cars had more than one person in them, and several of them had children in car seats. Anyway, the State Patrol has identified 6 shooting victims. Luckily, most of them not seriously hurt, but 2 people were hospitalized, 1 initially in critical condition, later upgraded to serious. This was someone who was just driving down the freeway between South Seattle and Tacoma, Pierce County, shooting at people. People he didn't know, people he never met. He was just shooting at them. Here's Como's Lin Ann Nguyen with more.
Multiple victims described the suspect as wearing a ski mask, driving a white Volvo, and one person was able to provide a license plate. Within hours, authorities tracked the suspect down, finding a gun, a magazine, and loose ammo inside his car. Court documents say the suspect told investigators he believed he was being followed while driving, and people in cars were trying to run him off the road. He also stated he was shooting to get the people who were following him to back off. And the suspect's defense attorney did say in court today he does have concerns about his client's mental capacity to be able to stand trial. That suspect is expected to be formally charged later this week. Reporting live in downtown Seattle, Lynn Nguyen, Como News.
So if he's mentally unstable, what's he doing with a gun? And how many counts of attempted murder will he be charged with? And you can't say this was a crime of passion, a crime in the moment, i.e. second degree attempted murder, because he was wearing a ski mask to conceal his identity, which suggests premeditation. Also, the utter lack of any provocation. All they were doing was driving. And on yesterday's show, I was contrasting the reaction to this awful and horrific shooting episode, which took place over several hours. He basically did a 8:30 show and went up and down shooting I-5, shooting people. And then he took a break and went out again after 10:30, shooting people at night, shooting people. And I was contrasting this yesterday with the case of the Bellevue sniper back in 1973, where someone in the woods, later identified as man in his mid-20s named Carl Harp, was randomly shooting at cars as they passed by. He wounded one person, killed another. And there was absolute pandemonium throughout the Seattle area. I mean, this dominated the headlines and dominated the news, that the idea that people could be driving their car and just be shot at by someone standing in the woods for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it was an incident, a criminal incident that defined that one of the signature marks of 1973 was the notorious Bellevue sniper case. And there were just two people who were shot. Here, you've got someone shot, shooting, trying to kill people in 8 automobiles so far that we know of. And it's just essentially being treated as, man, this is really terrible. Boy, that's really unfortunate. Wow, glad I wasn't out there that night. I got to give credit. Danny Westneat has a column. Seattle seems to be accepting a new normal of higher gun violence. Quote, when state troopers, this is Danny's opening riff here. When state troopers convened Tuesday to discuss our latest mass shooting, a rolling spasm of random violence across two counties on I-5 Monday night, they said something debatable right off the bat. Quote, what we saw last night, I think we can universally agree it's unacceptable in a modern society, said State Patrol Captain Ron Mead. And then Danny Westneat asks, do we universally agree? Because after detailing how a Volvo driver shot into 7, now 8, cars of complete strangers across a couple of hours, the troopers also revealed that this was just another day out on the local pavement. Quote, total year to date, here in King County, we've had 37 shootings on freeways and highways, said Chris Loftus, State Patrol spokesperson. These are shootings where we have victims, statements, bullet holes, shell casing, something to investigate. And then further that we would actually have hundreds if you counted all the times that gunshots are reported or when someone saw a driver waving around a gun. So, bottom line is what should be completely unacceptable is becoming, sadly, depressingly acceptable. And it is because we have chosen not to hammer people who steal guns or hammer people who illegally possess guns. And increasingly, we are taking the emphasis off of criminals who use guns in a threatening way or even shooting people until people are actually hit and wounded or killed. That's what needs to change. My good friend, Ray Coffey, Major General Ray Coffey, in terms of his appearance on this morning's show, because he's got a great invitation for KVI listeners. General Coffey, how are you, sir?
Good morning, John. Thank you so much for giving me some airtime. This is a real special annual program that we do out here in Shoreline. During the COVID time period, we were limited to where we could have this, and we had it at our Veteran Plaza outdoors. But since then, and we have this establishment we do monthly called the Shoreline Heroes Cafe, where we have over 100 veterans show up for a day-long or morning-long time period of social interaction and guest speakers and like, and they get refreshments and free lunch provided for them.
I tell you what, anyway. We're having a little bit of trouble with your signal. The clarity of your signal does not match the clarity of your voice, Ray. But again, what Ray is talking about here is that there's going to be an annual recognition of
9/11 remembrance.
9/11 annual remembrance of 9/11. Representatives from the airlines, police, and fire department, and active duty military. There will be music provided by the Ames Family Singers, a keynote speaker from the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, New York City, a complimentary lunch provided by the Laurel Cove Retirement Home in Shoreline. Opening ceremonies start at 10 a.m. after a 60-minute social time with veterans. I got all that right so far, General?
John, you're hitting it 100%. Thank you so much.
All right. And KVI listeners are allowed to attend this, encouraged to attend this for free?
Yeah, this will be an opportunity for them to come in. And like I said, we have over 100 veterans that come in from North King County and South Snohomish County from all eras. You know, we have as late as World War II vet. We have Korean era vets. We have the Vietnam era.
We have a few recent vets. Okay, Ray, if people want to attend, how do they do it?
Well, essentially, we don't have a site they can sign up to, but it's held at the Scottish Rite Hall in Shoreline, and the address is 1207 okay. North 152nd Street.
We will get this word out to people as the event approaches, and I hope people can come. Bring your kids. Boy, what a great, powerful experience for them, and it's free for KVI listeners and everybody else as well. Ray Coffey, thanks for joining us, sir.
Thank you so much, John.
Want to opine on anything you have heard today or anything you want to hear that you haven't heard yet? Well, that's why we have our text line. And yes, we read all your texts that come over. Sometimes we'll share them with the audience here at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And by the way, that was that nice invitation everyone received just a moment ago from Major General Ray Coffey, who I've known for many years, just a stand-up guy, just a heck of a great guy. Ray said, look, young kids today don't remember 9/11. In fact, young kids today, you know, think about 9/11 the way kids in the, you know, 60s and 70s thought about Pearl Harbor. It's just kind of a distant memory. And they're trying to bring that memory back to people. And so, again, this is going to be a remembrance ceremony, which is held annually. And there'll be representatives from, well, there'll be many veterans there from the various military branches. And there'll be a complimentary lunch provided. And the ceremonies start about 10 in the morning. And you are invited to attend this remembrance ceremony for free. And wouldn't that be something nice for kids or grandkids to participate in? And it's going to be in Shoreline, just north of Seattle, at the Scottish Rite Hall, which has been there a long time, if memory serves correct. The Scottish Rite Hall on 152nd Street. We'll give you more information as the date approaches, but just want you to know about it. Okay, we are learning more information about the shooter in Georgia who entered Appalachian High School and shot and killed two students, shot and killed two teachers, put another nine people, most of them kids, in the hospital. A lot of other kids hurt in the commotion and pandemonium that ensued before a school resource officer, a uniformed police officer, confronted the 14-year-old shooter and demanded he put down the weapon, which he did. We are learning that this kid's very troubled and had posted threats last year that were taken seriously enough that the FBI paid a visit to the family home. And the father acknowledged, yeah, we've got hunting rifles here in the house, but they're locked up. And he doesn't have access to them. And apparently, that was that. And he was not arrested, not charged with anything, and was apparently not expelled from school, was allowed to continue attending school. And the morning of the attack on Wednesday, yesterday, somebody called the school, said there's going to be gun attacks on five schools today, starting with Appalachie High. So it's coming. And it's not clear how seriously that threat was taken and or how short the time was between the threatening phone call and the gunman opening fire. So they're trying to figure out who might have been behind that phone call, whether it was the shooter himself or whether a friend or someone realized, hey, this is actually going to happen, and tried to warn the school. We're not sure about that. What's interesting is that the 14-year-old will be tried. They've already made the decision. He will be tried as an adult. This isn't going to be some, you'll be held until your 21st birthday, mental health treatment, and then hopefully that will suffice. It's not going to suffice. He will be tried as an adult and treated as an adult. Clearly, a lot of premeditation went into this attack. So, when we learn more, you will learn more, because you just know there's going to be more information coming. It is coming up on 10 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay, want to shift gears here. A story that continues to develop. Right after the George Floyd Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, a lot of companies either created or vastly expanded what they called their diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and initiatives. And of course, so did universities, colleges, so did government agencies. The watchword was DEI. And the problem with DEI is that it is these programs, instead of bringing people together, actually created more division, more tension, didn't unite and bring people together. They divided and drove people apart, which, by the way, was actually the intention of some of the hardline radicals who were pushing some of these programs. I bring this to your attention because there are now some major U.S. companies that are done with it. They're either vastly revising or they're dropping altogether their DEI programs. The latest is Coors Beer. The Molson Coors Company becomes the latest American business to walk away. Molson Coors telling its employees day before yesterday, company-wide email, it will no longer participate in the ardently liberal human rights campaign's Corporate Equality Index, which grades how well companies adhere to LGBTQ plus policies in the workplace. Not only that, Molson Coors will also end its supplier diversity goals, which it shouldn't have had in the first place, which involve buying supplies from companies that are owned by racial minorities or women. So they're basically using different rules for people of different races who own or run companies. It's not how it's supposed to work. That's not what civil rights were all about. This was a company-wide internal email. It revealed that the company has been working since last spring to move away from the diversity, equity, and inclusion approach and instead embrace all employees regardless of race or sex. Quote, the driving force behind this shift was the understanding that when all our people know they are welcome, they are more engaged, motivated, and committed to the company's collective success. Close quote. That is what I have been saying for some time that it is a good idea for companies to make everyone feel welcome and to reach out and expand opportunity to any who might be interested in either working for a company or working for a government agency or working for or attending a college or university. There should be efforts to widen the doors of opportunity. But you don't do that by using, again, different rules for people depending on what they look like. Because what people look like is often just skin deep. The other is that when it comes to how people should treat each other in the workplace, that's even simpler. Treat people the way you want to be treated. That should be the guiding standard, the core principle behind all of these so-called diversity programs. Is that the golden rule is golden for a reason. It's timeless. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Just treat others like you want to be treated. We should be dismantling completely this architecture of built-in racial, ethnic, sexual orientation, and gender political ideology. Just dismantle it in toto and replace it with programs based on treat others the way you want to be treated. And then we won't have all this division and we won't have this incredible waste of time and money. Oh, by the way, Molson Coors joins a chorus of companies who just this summer have taken similar steps. Ford Motor Company, you remember I mentioned this to you last week, doing basically the same thing Molson Coors is doing. Lowe's Hardware Stores doing the same thing. The parent company of Jack Daniels is taking a walk on the DEI agenda. So is Harley Davidson. What the hell were they doing involved with DEI in the first place? The John Deere Tractor Company, Tractor Supply, they have all abandoned their DEI initiatives in recent weeks. Good for them. That's the future. Everyone needs to start moving away from these policies that were created in an environment of hysteria. Lowe's Hardware Stores mentioned the recent Supreme Court decision striking down racial preference policies in college admissions that were aimed primarily at Asians. Now, they'll say, oh, we're just trying to diversify our enrollment. What they were trying to do was do that by treating Asian students differently, making it harder for Asian kids to get in because they were Asian, period. That is why Lowe's said that, well, if that's where the Supreme Court's going, we're going to abandon our diversity quotas in hiring. That is probably going to be the next big Supreme Court case, whether to apply the principles of the Harvard case, which applies to both public and private education, to the corporate sector. And the answer is, of course they should. And especially, most especially to government agencies. A lot of this credit goes to a conservative filmmaker, Robbie Starbuck, who has made it his mission to expose corporate America adopting progressive left-wing dogma that is at complete variance with the values of their customers. No one wants to be the next Bud Light. No one wants to be the next poster child for wokeness in the business world. Mm-mm. No one. With maybe the exception of, you know, a cannabis company or something like that. No major mainstream American corporation wants to go through what Bud Light, what Anheuser-Busch has gone through. They still have not recovered, by the way. They still have not recovered. They've tried everything. It's just not working. A trust was broken. And these DEI initiatives are just one more reason why these companies grow out of touch with the people they are there to serve, the people they exist to serve, their customers. What's going on from the socialists on social media?
Both Kamala Harris and Barack Obama are commenting on this fatal school shooting in Georgia, outside of Atlanta. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. On the Kamala HQ social media handle, this is for the Kamala Harris campaign, they posted a video clip of Kamala Harris speaking about this. And the quote that they added, Vice President Harris says, "It's outrageous that every day in our country, parents have to send their children to school worried about whether or not their child will come home alive. It's senseless. We have to end this this epidemic of gun violence in our country once and for all." And I'll confess, you know, I have a 16-year-old son, 11th grader now in high school, and it crosses my mind pretty much once a week. Like, man, you know, what if something happens at my son's school? Sure. Barack Obama reposted what Kamala Harris posted and added, it doesn't have to be this way. But what neither one of them get to, and they'll both advocate for more gun control laws, that I'm sure of, but what they don't want to talk about is why do we have so many young people who feel like they're entitled to taking out revenge in that violent way on other people?
Another thing to consider is, why is it that gun violence is highest in areas that are blue states, blue cities, mm-hmm, or blue counties? Why are those far and away, not even a close call, why are those the most likely places you have your so-called epidemic of gun violence?
Well, I mean,
Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, St. Louis, all these things have in common. These are all cities that run according to progressive values. Why is Seattle's violence so worse than it used to be?
Is still the person who wants to seek out revenge or some other payback. And we are still waiting to kind of find out what the motivation was in the school shooting in Georgia from yesterday. But that's at the heart of the issue, is what is it that prompts these young people to want to lash out in this way? I mean, a generation ago, people did not lash out that way to the extent that they do now. So what's going on? But no one on either side of the gun control or Second Amendment protection debate wants to get into that as it relates to young people or these school shootings. And I mean, we're talking about one up in Linwood at Alderwood Mall off and on for the last couple of months, where a 16-year-old was getting punched and assaulted and threatened, turns around, whips out a gun, aims at the person attacking him, misfires, or ends up firing and missing at the intended suspect, and shoots and kills a 13-year-old.
A girl who had nothing to do with any of that.
Exactly.
She was just in the food court, walking out of the food court with a friend, when this guy who pulls out a gun and starts chasing after the guy who punched him, and And then fires, and of course misses him, hits the poor girl.
But the politicians are quick to make their pronouncements, but none of them want to focus in on why is it that young people react this way and lash out in either violence or revenge. And I think it's because there's this entitlement mentality that they're somehow, they're owed something. But nobody wants to bring that part up. That part gets ignored. It's the expedience of, oh, let's create another gun control law, or let's defend against having another gun control law. Why is that?
I love how the, again, the Kamala Harris campaign, Barack Obama, as you mentioned, their first instinct is to, how can I use this for political purposes? Because nothing they suggest would have prevented. Nothing on their gun agenda would have prevented these shootings from taking place. It just becomes an excuse to, you know, nail their agenda to a passing tragedy. It is coming up on 8:30. Is that it, Phil? That is it for social media from Socialists this morning on The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. Don't know if you're thinking of heading out to the movies this weekend or not. But there is one motion picture that is actually gaining popularity, even though, you know, usually the most popular week for a movie is not only its first week, but it's really its first weekend. But every once in a while, a movie comes along that steps up and adds more momentum to its popularity as it's been in the theaters. That movie right now is Reagan, the biopic about the lifetimes and immense influence of Ronald Reagan and his presidency. It was a low-budget movie, even though it has a wonderful cast. Not a lot of marketing. It was predicted to maybe make $5 million in its opening, you know, weekend. Instead, it collected over twice that amount of money. And then on Tuesday, it shot past all of its competitors and claimed the number one spot on a per-screen basis, meaning how many people per average, how many people are watching the movie at the theaters it's screening at. The film's distributor has decided to add new locations, so the movie is now going to be available in more places. Quote, we're thrilled to have the number one highest per screen average, noted Kevin Mitchell. Thanks to fans of this movie for turning out, we will be adding new theaters for our second week. Here's the irony about this. The critics hate this movie. System used to gauge, you know, how critics feel, Rotten Tomatoes, it's called, gives it a critic score of 22%, meaning only 22% of critics like Reagan. But CinemaScore and Rotten Tomatoes also gauge how people feel about the movie who've seen it. Moviegoers give it a 98% thumbs up rating. So only 22% of the critics like the movie, 98% of the people who've seen the movie like the movie. That is a 76% gap. And that makes it the film with the highest gap between critics and fans in the history of theatrical films in Hollywood. Ronald Reagan would be pleased. He was once asked whether criticism from the New York Times, Washington Post, elite media bothered him. And he said, well, you know, I read them, but no, it doesn't bother me. He said, and he was asked, why not? And he smiled and said, never confuse the critics with the box office. In other words, I'm not here for the critics. I'm here for the people. You know, the people who go to the movies, those are your customers. You're there for them. The American people, you're there for them. And so that little quip, there's a lot of wisdom in that quip, as there was in a lot of what Reagan would say from time to time. And never confuse the critics with the box office. Would you rather, how many of these movies in recent years that have been nominated for Oscars that no one has heard of, hardly anyone has heard of and hardly anyone has seen, but the critics loved the movie? The critics love the film. Would you rather have a movie that's popular with moviegoers or popular with critics? So if you have a chance, you might want to head out and see the movie Reagan this weekend. Stars Dennis Quaid as Reagan. John Voight, Academy Award winner, is also in the movie. And so is Penelope Ann Miller. So check it out. All right. A controversy. Donald Trump under fire for supposedly telling the voters of Pennsylvania, you have to vote for me. And of course, when I saw that, I went, you know, let me see the context on that. I really want to get a better idea of what really happened. Here's what happened. Kamala Harris has changed her position on fracking. She was adamant that she opposed fracking when she was running for president 5 short years ago. So we're not talking about, oh, when I was in school or, oh, early in my career. This is when she was a United States senator running for president just 5 years ago. She was asked this question, and here's how she answered it.
Will you commit to implementing a federal ban on fracking your first day in office, adding the United States to the list of countries who have banned this devastating practice?
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking.
So, yeah. So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes. And I've, again, worked on that.
Okay, so she would ban offshore drilling, and there's no question that I support a ban on fracking. So there is no nuance there. No exceptions. No hedge words like in most cases or almost all the time I would be opposed to. No, there's no question I support a ban on fracking. Well, the Democrats need to win Pennsylvania. Fracking is very, very popular in Pennsylvania. It's a major oil and natural gas producing state. So Kamala Harris has now changed her position on fracking. And Donald Trump says, what? You're really going to believe her? Here's what he said last night. It was a town hall in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It was moderated by Sean Hannity.
Pennsylvania can't take a chance that answer is true. But she's been there for 20 years. That's what she's been saying for a long time. And she will do that. There's no chance that she's going to allow it. The election will take place. If she won, you're not going to have any fracking in Pennsylvania. You have 500,000 jobs. Think of that. It's your biggest business. And you get a big majority of your income from fracking. And you have somebody that's not going to allow fracking. She's not going to allow it. You can't take the chance. You have no choice. You've got to vote for me. You've got to vote for me. You've got to. Even if you don't like me, you know?
Okay, so that's Trump laughing, saying, you know, between her and me, come on, there's no choice. You got to vote for me. Even if you don't like me. And that is what is now being treated by some media outlets as Trump telling the people they have no choice. Again, these people have no sense of self-awareness of how idiotic they are. All they can hope is that someone, well, like me and others, aren't showing people the full picture. They're afraid. Think about this. They're afraid to show people the full picture. They're afraid to put Kamala Harris out there in front of a larger audience. They're afraid to, meaning Q&A and the news media. They'll have her deliver prepared remarks in front of an audience, so they've got her reading a teleprompter now. That's an improvement. But she and Tim Walz, who just accumulates more baggage by the day, the Democrats are so worried about their agenda, both in the last 3.5 years and going forward, what they intend to do, that they are trying to keep her under wraps to the greatest extent possible. And now they're going to be doing 5 days of debate prep. 5 days of full-fledged debate prep, meaning they're alarmed about how prepared she is to debate right now. So this is what is called a tell. This is very revealing about how confident the Democrats are. She'll say she's against fracking and just leave it, and hopefully we won't get into follow-up questions, things like that, because I think Trump is absolutely right. There's absolutely no doubt that she will oppose fracking once she's president. She'll switch her positions back. It would be as effortless as, well, shifting them in the first place, which she did, changing them in the first place. Interesting. For someone whose values haven't changed, her positions certainly have. Ruth Dalton was killed in a ghastly, violent, vicious carjacking 2 weeks ago in Seattle's Madison Park neighborhood. This is the east side of Capitol Hill, between Capitol Hill and Lake Washington. She was taking dogs, including her own, to a dog park when she was attacked and thrown into the street and then run over with her own car. Later, her dog was stabbed to death and thrown into a nearby garbage can up on Beacon Hill at a park. I think it was Brighton Park. There was a vigil for her last night. And here is what one of her friends told Como 4 at the vigil.
We've become so desensitized to violence. There's just so much of it every day. And the horrible thing that happened to our Ruth right here at 10 o'clock in the morning. You can't be safe driving to the dog park at 10 o'clock in the morning. There's a problem.
If you can't drive to the dog park at 10 o'clock in the morning, you're not safe anywhere. That is so correct. I don't recall the governor of this state saying anything about Ruth Dalton. I'm glad she was remembered. I hope she will be remembered by the next governor of Washington State. Dave Reichert attended that vigil last night for Ruth Dalton. Bob Ferguson, Jay Inslee, nowhere to be seen. It's not a tragedy that corresponds with a narrative that benefits them politically, so why show up? Well, maybe show up to show that something like this shouldn't be happening in Washington State in the first place.